Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour conference call. My name is Christine, and I will be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time you require operator assistance, please key star zero, and we will be happy to assist you. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host for today, Hector Kitts. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Wessex Route. I've done this a few times now, and nobody's complained about me talking about myself a little bit at the beginning, so I'll just explain who I am and what I and my team get up to. My job title basically is Senior Engineer for Geotech and Drainage on the Route, and that means myself and my colleague Anne Brown, and then a few engineers in our team, we look after all of the earthworks on the Route. So we look after the embankments that support the track formation, and we also look after all of the big cuttings where we try and stop landslides coming down onto the track. We also look after all of the drainage on the route, and we have slightly different ways of managing those different sorts of assets. The earthworks, we use contractors from AMI to do examinations, and then we do evaluations of those assets ourselves within the team. Mostly a guy called Dave Jones is around the route looking at things, whereas drainage inspectors are based within the DUs of the off-track teams. But from both of those routes, we pull that information together, and we primarily try and use that information to make good investment decisions to keep the railway safe. If you have any concerns about drainage problems on the route, or if you've got any concerns with earthwork problems on the route, then feel free to get in touch and let me know about them, because with 640 odd miles of route to look at and a limited amount of information coming in, there's always stuff that we can miss, so always happy to hear about other stuff. So that's enough for me. A couple of things I wanted to talk about today in Safety Hour. I'm going to kick off with driver safety, talk a little bit about challenging poor practice. There's a couple of things I've pulled out of the safety cascade, and then a few things which have cropped up in the wider rail industry over the last few months that were just discussing briefly. And again, no surprise to people that know me, but driver safety is an area of particular concern for me, not least of all because I'm a keen motorcyclist and cyclist. I spend a lot of time out on the roads on two wheels, not sitting inside a metal box. So myself and an awful lot of my friends and acquaintances through cycling clubs, motorcycle clubs, and the wider sort of cycling community, our lives quite literally rely on everyone who is sitting inside a metal box being wide awake and doing the right stuff, because if you bump into us, we'll get hurt. And that can have some pretty unpleasant consequences. So there's a few things I thought I would talk about today. In sort of context of that, one of the big things for me is I'm a real advocate of making sure that when I am on the road, that is the only thing I'm doing. Whether I'm on my bike, whether I'm on my motorbike, or whether I'm driving a car, that is the thing I'm doing. It's not something that you can sort of multitask with. It's something that takes all of your attention to do well. And a useful statistic that was just thrown at us in a previous session I was just in, so I'm stealing this number, 24,000, the number of people that were killed or seriously injured on the roads in the UK last year, which is, you know, a frightening number of people. That's a lot of people who didn't make it home at the end of the day as they'd intended to, and a lot of people who've gone through days, weeks, months, and even years of discomfort and rehab after accidents. I can't emphasise enough really that if you're on the road, and you're in control of a vehicle, or if you're in a vehicle with other people, it's the only important thing you're doing at that time. So there's loads of stuff you can do to remove distractions, you know, turn your phone off and put it where you can't reach it. So there's the temptation to see what that beeping was all about when a text message came in or a WhatsApp update came in or a Facebook update came in. They won't distract you if you don't know they've come in, so turn your phone off before you get in the car. There's also something about being ready to drive before you start driving, and I don't think it's unusual for people to jump in, put the seatbelt on, pull away, and then think, right, what am I doing? Where am I going? It's much better if you get yourself settled in the car and think about what you have to do next, which might even be things which are not driving related, and put them down. And what I mean by that is if you've got a list of 10 things that you need to do later on in the day, rather than try and juggle those 10 thoughts in your brain whilst you drive, get yourself away from that distracted state by making a note of the things you need to do. If you're worried about getting to your destination on time because you've tried to cram too much into the day, rather than jumping in the car and whizzing off and trying to get to the place you're going to get to, don't. Stop. Phone the person that you're going to meet. Let them know you're going to be 10 minutes late, and then turn your phone off. You've taken all the stress out, and if you're less stressed and you've managed to collect your thoughts, then you're going to be less distracted when you're driving. And there's also something about fatigue and working as teams. So frequently, people out on the route, out on the route, there'll be several people in the vehicle, several people who could drive. In your team, does the same guy always drive? And there's sort of a challenge two ways there. If you get in and you're sort of the nominated driver, but you don't, you know, you're massively distracted, you've got stuff going on at home, you're really tired, you didn't sleep well last night, you've got a couple of calls you could do with making. These are all things that are going to sort of put you off your game, as it were. So why do it? There's other people who could drive. Well, get one of them to drive. And I don't mean get people who drive class of vehicles that are not qualified to drive or anything else. I just mean if there's somebody else making the same journey in the same vehicle who could drive, and they're in a better state of mind, let them do it. And the other one is, if you're a passenger in the vehicle and the person who's driving is clearly having a bad day and is distracted, or they've clearly got other things to do, or they've also got to get the paperwork ready for the job when they get to site, well, offer to drive and say, come on, mate, you know, you've got too much on today, I'll drive. There's no sense in one person trying to do it all and then everybody else in the vehicle being endangered by that person not being on their game. And then, of course, when you've got a group of people in the vehicle, what else is everybody else in the vehicle up to? If you're causing distractions to the driver, then no nice way of saying it, pack it in. And if somebody in the vehicle is distracting the driver, you know, you're likely to be endangered, and the lives of other people on the road is being endangered as well. So tell them to pack it in. You know, there's something about challenging ourselves and challenging each other. One last thing there in terms of things which, you know, say a keen cyclist, keen motorcyclist. There's a big thing for me, and something I see quite frequently when I'm on the road, particularly when I'm cycling, because as a cyclist, I can't go as fast up hills as anybody in sort of motorised vehicle can. I give you a fair run downhill, but uphill I'm going to be travelling slower than you are. That means I get overtaken a lot. It's inevitable. And if you drive too close to the car in front and they pull out late to pass a cyclist, you don't give yourself time to see that cyclist and to safely move over and give them fair space. So I see this quite frequently where people are tailgating a vehicle in front, and the vehicle in front pulls out to overtake me. People who are travelling too close to the car behind are, as often as like often as not, will pass me too safe. And there's a couple of sort of campaigns been going on around the country in the last few months about improving cycle safety in and around drivers. And one of the key things there is when you overtake a cyclist, always give that cyclist as much space as if you're overtaking a car. You know, when I'm riding my bike, I cannot always ride in a straight line. That's not because I'm incompetent. It's because there are all sorts of slippery drain covers and potholes and everything else that I may need to swerve around. If you don't give me space to do that, I don't have the option of just riding straight through these things. You know, I'm not a Land Rover. I am a bicycle. So I need to be able to move around the lane. And there are other things that I do when I'm cycling, which you will see other cyclists do, which might annoy you if you don't think about it. But if there's a left-hand curve, I will move out to the right to prevent people overtaking me. And that's might be a little bit annoying for you because you say you feel like you're missing 10 seconds. Well, you're not actually getting held up. I'm preventing you from overtaking me at a time when you can't see to pass me safely. And then I get round the curve and I pull back in towards the curb and you can get past me. And you don't lose any time because you just catch up with the next car anyway. And the short time you spent behind me doesn't actually cost you any time, but it does stop you putting yourself in a dangerous situation. And then sort of back to the number of people who get injured and hurt on the roads every year. I had an accident last year cycling. My partner also had an accident cycling. As it happens, it was not on the road, but having injuries really messes your life up. So we've ended up cancelling two holidays. We've ended up not doing all sorts of things that we enjoy doing. So if you're involved in an accident on the road or anywhere else in work, the consequences don't last hours or days often. They can last months. So driving irresponsibly can lead to that level of discomfort in your life and the lives of other people. So, you know, take it seriously. Last thing on driver safety is there are a number of driver training courses available for Network Rail staff. There's half days or full day courses. The safety team have an allocation that are sort of funded, and not all of those courses have been taken up to date. So if you do a lot of driving for work, or perhaps you don't do a lot of driving for work, maybe like many people, you live in London and you drive very infrequently, and sometimes you get given a hire car and you need to go and drive a lot. You know, various reasons why you might benefit from a driving course. In fact, everyone benefits from driving courses. But if you feel like it's something that you could certainly benefit from, if you are a line manager and you have staff that you feel would benefit from improving their driving, if you have colleagues who you feel have got driving habits that would benefit from a bit of polishing, then speak to your line manager and have them speak to them. You know, maybe challenge people directly. If you feel that somebody is not the safest driver on the road, suggest that they ask their line manager to get onto one of these driving courses. And then line managers can contact Tracy Capstick in the safety team, who can tell you exactly how to get onto these driving courses. But there are places available on driving courses to help improve your driving experience and make it safer for you and people around you. Right, enough on driving. The next little thing I wanted to talk about briefly was about challenging poor practice. I spend most of my life, most of my time in the office. I don't get to go out on site as much as I would like, but every time I do, there are things out there that I see that I wish hadn't been done like that. And I occasionally work in possessions, and when I do, I nearly always see stuff that could be done better. And as a, you know, moderately senior member of the team, it's part of my responsibility to sort of pull people up when I see people doing the wrong stuff. So it's not always a comfortable situation, and sometimes it's people you know well and you like, but if they're not behaving safely, need to challenge it. And I just wanted to sort of make the point that as a business, we probably are not quite there in terms of the level of challenge. Because if we were, then some of the accidents and injuries that we do get wouldn't happen. And examples, working in a possession recently, I saw people not wearing hats, not wearing gloves, not wearing glasses, all mandatory. And the thing that was sort of clear to me was several contractors working on several projects and various sort of construction managers and senior-ish people wandering about. People were prepared to challenge within their own teams, but not over the fence, as it were. So if you're working alongside people from a different discipline and they're not behaving safely, it's still okay to challenge. You don't need to be challenging people only who are directly involved in the work that you are doing. And this isn't about creating turf wars or falling out with people. It's actually looking out for people. Some people might not be doing it right through ignorance. Some people might not be doing it right because they think it's okay because they never get challenged. But actually, we're all Network Rail staff. We all have a responsibility to make sure that the rules that are there to make our life safer are followed. And it takes very little effort to lead by example, you know, make sure your own kit is in good order and you've got it all in place and all your paperwork's up to speed and you've got a risk assessment for all the stuff you're doing. It's not difficult. And then when you see other people who are clearly working beyond the scope of what they're supposed to do, or they're cutting corners because they forgot some equipment, or they haven't got the PPE, or they're just, you know, a bit slapdash about the way they're doing things, actually, you're not interfering, you're helping, because if you stop somebody getting hurt, then everyone has a better week than they. Within the period safety cascade, I'm not going to go all the way through it because it's stuff which is easy to do when you've got the slides in front of you, and that's probably stuff that you do in your teams as much as anything else. But there's a couple of things I just wanted to pick up. One is something that I've not looked into in any detail, but there's an amendment in the wording. So in the health and wellbeing section on the periods of health cascade, the first item, amendment of wording regarding general health issues, introduction of DVLA guidance for management of general health issues, blah, blah, blah. And I think what this is referring to is there are a number of health conditions that if you have them, you need to inform DVLA, driver and vehicle licensing authority. And it's just a reminder there that there is a change to that. So if you have any health conditions that you need to report to DVLA, it might be worth checking in on that. And if you have health conditions that you are not sure whether you need to report them to DVLA, then worth contacting, worth looking into it and making sure that you're all up to speed. Similarly, if you're a line manager and you've got staff that drive, then I think it forms part of the responsibility to make sure people do that stuff. And for the very basic stuff, that is, like, if you need glasses for driving, you've got to wear glasses when you drive. But there's also other conditions like diabetes, various things that can increase the chances of people losing consciousness, where DVLA needs to be informed. So there's a change in the guidance, it's just worth looking into. The other thing within the health and welfare bit is the section on Lyme disease. And I don't know what you know about this, but basically leptospirosis or Lyme disease or RAP disease. I know people talk about this a fair bit, but I thought I'd just flag this up because, crikey, you know, rats are everywhere, and when working out on site, it's difficult to keep clean. We all get hungry, we have to eat, so it's very easy for people to pick up this disease. And the reason I thought I'd bring it to people's attention is I had a colleague a few years ago who became infected with leptospirosis. I used to work for the Environment Agency, and the guy in question was a fisheries bailiff, so he spent a lot of his time wandering up and down rivers, checking rod licenses, making sure that fishery owners were doing all of their stuff legally and that kind of thing. But he got infected with leptospirosis, and one of the things that can happen with leptospirosis is it can attack your kidneys. And this is what happened to my colleague. And the impact that it had on him was really severe. So this is just a reminder that, yeah, we talk about this from time to time, but this is a genuine risk. The guy in question, he was called Ronnie. He was a lovely guy, quite a energetic chap, very much into his sort of country sports. I'm guessing he was sort of late 40s, early 50s when he became infected. It took him off work for 18 months, and then he was still kind of on light duties for about a year after that. So he had somewhere in the region of a 3-year recovery. And when I say recovery, you'd have thought he was 70 at the end of them 3 years. It put years on him. And it severely curtailed what he could do. He was never the same again. He lost 3 or 4 stone. He was not a big guy anyway. It took all the weight off him. He ended up requiring all sorts of medical interventions for a long time. And I dare say the long-term consequence of that, you know, will be with him forever. So the simple sort of steps that you can take to protect yourself from leptospirosis, absolutely worth doing. You know, good hygiene before you eat and smoke is the main thing, and don't sort of shrug off if you're getting broken skin injuries when you're out and about. And if you get any other symptoms, which is sort of starts like a cold, like most things seem to, get yourself checked out, because, like so many things, better if caught early. But yeah, leptospirosis, a truly, truly horrible disease if you catch it, so do protect yourself. There's a load of stuff in the brief which, and loads of stuff online as well about leptospirosis and how to protect yourself, which is worth looking up rather than me reading a load of stuff here. Next thing I'll talk to briefly is just a few of the RABE, which is Rail Accident Investigation Bureau, reports which have been released in the last few weeks. There's some interesting stuff going on out there as ever. The three that I've picked out as worthy of a bit of discussion today. First one is some track workers were struck recently by ballast when a train passed them. And this is sort of, the reason there was some hydraulic hoses had come loose on this train, so the train was dragging something along the track, and of course the train crew were not aware, and that resulted in ballast being kicked up by the train, and it sort of showered on the staff. And I just think this is sort of, you know, the reason that and my understanding might not be perfect, but the reason that we are required to wear hard hats on track is because on another occasion some track workers were struck about the head by ballast from a ballast train. Well, it just goes to show really, I think, that despite the fact that sometimes you might be walking around on site and there is nothing above you and wearing a hard hat feels a bit daft, We need to get beyond that, and you know, the sort of, apart from the corporate instruction that hard hat is part of the uniform when you're outside, which is, you know, actually really good, and it means that the conversation can move on to genuine safety management rather than banging on about tedious do or don't wear a hat conversations. Actually, things can come off trains like bits of ballast. Trains that pass you Some have still got opening windows and the public could throw litter out and everything else. And if it's coming at you at 70, 80, 90 mile an hour, that could be quite unpleasant as well. Wearing hard hats on site is actually a tremendously good idea. No real inconvenience and good protection from things coming at you. But just an example there of a slightly left field incident just reminds us that hats and glasses are definitely worth wearing when we're out and about. The next one, which is highlighted on the Rogue website at the moment, is the incident in Gloucestershire on February 17. Train struck location cabinet door in tunnel is the headline. And I think there's a few things there which we can take away. That's not the first time this has happened, so there is certainly something around equipment in tunnels. If at times equipment needs to be installed in tunnels, but there's something certainly we should do within the asset management community to really challenge that. If a cabinet needs to be installed in a tunnel, firstly, the first question really should be, does it really need to be in a tunnel? Can we not have the cabinet remote from the whatever gubbins it's plumbed into and have the cabinet at the mouth of the tunnel? There are some long tunnels on the rail network, and there are some long tunnels on the route, but there's also quite a few short tunnels. And is it really that important that the cabinet is put there where you've got very limited space? Then there's another design question about whether or not having a door that can be struck by passing trains is actually a good idea. Surely tweaking the design would be sensible, so that maybe having two opening sections to the door rather than one, so that half the depth, because actually the damage that a cabinet door can do to trains is quite significant. The previous incident that I'm aware of, windows were broken and the public travelling the train was showered with broken glass. But then it comes on to what people can do in the route once things are installed in tunnels, and that is, well, if you use that cabinet, make sure it's locked. If the lock's broken on the cabinet, make sure it's secured. If you've not got a way of securing the cabinet, make sure you tell ops so that trains don't come past it. They can pass the caution until it can be rectified and all that sort of thing. So it's just a reminder, really, that the wind loadings within tunnels can be really significant, and if there are cabinets or indeed anything else in tunnels that could be could come into contact with the train, the consequences can be really unpleasant. If it doesn't look right, tell somebody and get it fixed, I guess is the takeaway message. And then the next one, which is drifting a little bit more back into my sort of part of the business, is the partial collapse of the wall in the cutting at Liverpool Lime Street. It's my part of the world, I'm from near there. I'm quite familiar with the approach to Liverpool Lime Street. For people that don't know, you drop into sandstone cutting from several miles outside of Liverpool. And the wall, these sandstone walls tower above the railway. There are sections that are visibly cut rock. There are sections where the rock was soft and fractured, and there are bits of masonry wall to fill in the gaps and to keep those cuttings safe and secure. And then, of course, at the top of the cutting, in order that people don't fall into the hole, because this is a sort of relatively city centre location, you've got walls. So the walls, which sometimes the walls are standalone things built on top of the rock. At other places, the walls are sort of come halfway down the depth of the cutting. At other places, the walls go full depth. But a few weeks ago, there was a section of masonry wall in the upper part of the cutting collapsed, fell into the cutting, damaged overhead lines, and spread fallen masonry across all floor running lines. So I think it was 2 or 3 days. Liverpool Lime Street was unavailable for trains to come and go. Very lucky in many regards, because no in-service train was affected, so neither did any masonry fall onto a train, nor did any train run into the masonry on the track. But it's still required. Trains still end up trapped in section. People need to be evacuated and walked out, which is far from ideal. And then a huge amount of disruption for several days as that was cleared and made safe. And I guess this is just another example of if you, there's no detailed investigation into this yet. Exactly what happened is not yet understood. But it's just a reminder to all of us that when we're out and about, if we see something which looks like it may be on its last legs, report it to the appropriate team so that it can be assessed and, if necessary, made safe. But yeah, a frightening incident for the civils community, because there are lots of large cuttings on the network, some of which are all sorts of different geologies and rock types, and all sorts of bits of masonry and wall patched in with the stone with the natural ground to make those cuttings. And like everything, like a lot of other stuff on the railway, these date back from the original construction of the railway at times. So we've got assets out there which are approaching 200 years old, and various additions and subtractions and modifications have been made. We have inspection regimes in place to try and keep these things in a good and safe condition, but we're not there every day. So if you see things you don't like the look of, report it, and we'll get people out there to look at things. And I thought the last thing that I would talk about very briefly is fatigue. And I just wanted to put sort of frame this in a more sort of general sense. We talk sometimes about the total number of hours that people work and the rest periods between shifts. But do we also look at do we look ourselves in the eye occasionally and sort of say, are we trying to fit too much in? Are we wearing ourselves down? And just a bit of a reflection sort of personally, I guess, with London Waterloo is currently shut, so teams are split between Paddington and Basingstoke. As part of the RAM team's duties, we have things to do in the route, and we get dragged off to national meetings in Milton Keynes and around the country. And it's sort of a personal reflection of myself a little bit. I do a bit of sport outside of work and various other things, and I'd really allowed myself to get run down over the last couple of weeks. But then in sort of bringing that conversation into the team, and the wider team across the business, are we quick enough to spot when we're running out of steam ourselves, but also are we good enough at sort of extending a helping hand to colleagues when you can see people who are just getting a bit snowed under and a bit worn down? Because safety is actually about concentrating and doing the right thing all the time, isn't it? And if we take too much on and grind ourselves into the floor, we make less safe decisions or we don't finish the job properly. So that's sort of a request for everyone to reflect on whether or not you can do it all, and if something needs to go, if you need more space in your life, be that in work or at home or the things you like to do in your own time, and you can't fit it all in, then speak to your line manager, or there's also the counselling services available to try and sort of unburden yourself, because if you're frazzled, you'll make bad decisions. And that's partly a personal responsibility thing, but it's also something where we need to check out for our colleagues, because people may well have stuff going on in their life that they're not talking about, and if you keep piling on the pressure, it can all become too much. So if people are trying to push back, saying they can't fit it in, not in an intrusive way, but in a friendly way, try and find out why and see if they need support, report that to the people who can help. That's it for me. I'm going to wind up there, and I'll ask Christine to come back in, and if anybody has any questions, there'll be an opportunity to ask them now.
Or, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask an audio question, please key star 1 on your phone pad. You must immediately record your name followed by the pound key. Please be sure to register your name in order to register your question. Please key star 1 to begin. There are no questions at this time.
Is the line still open, Christine?
Yes, sir.
No questions. That's fine. I've just found the reference number for the driver training for anyone who is interested is November Romeo, November Foxtrot Echo 001 driver training. That appears to be the reference number. So if you need to speak to your line manager or to training services, that might be the easiest way to find it. But as I say, if you also want the safety team to help you find that training, then Tracy Capstick can get you onto that course.
We have your first question from the line of...
Chris Goodwin.
Please proceed.
Hard hats. I know we all have to follow the party line about hard hats, which I cannot resist saying were introduced as a fashion accessory to reinforce Balfour Beatty's corporate identity. But what higher management ignore are the drawbacks of wearing these hard hats, which is how uncomfortable they are, how painful they are for many people to wear, how hot they are, how distracting they are. Now, bump caps, when we were allowed to use them, were a good solution. Nowhere near as bad, yet did provide some head protection. Not allowed to wear them anymore. They were dismissed as a mere fashion accessory. So what about seeking a much better type of head protection that is comfortable to wear and not distracting? You spoke about making bad decisions. If you're being distracted by wearing these things, then you're likely to make bad decisions. You're likely not to have your concentration on where the trains are and what you're doing. They are really distracting things to wear. I know they may have uses and they may have saved one or two people from the odd bit of ballast, but the overwhelming thing is they are uncomfortable. There we are. Right.
Well, that's it's a personal view, isn't it? I have a different personal view.
It's a personal view. I have canvassed many people. Are you happy wearing these hats? No, they're painful to wear. No, I get instant headaches. It's not just me. It's many people. How many people have you canvassed?
Well, I've worked in industries where I was on site 7 days a week wearing a hard hat the whole time and didn't struggle with it. Maybe I'm lucky, but... you know, if there is a process, isn't there, for feeding back about the quality of PPE through the supply chain, and I'm sure there are various manufacturers of hard hats. Cracky, it's
okay. So where are we on this? Last time I fed back on this and wrote a letter, I was told you're just going to have to accept this, and that's the end of the matter. So. You know, the railway just said it isn't going to do anything about it. I hear what you say, that you're able to wear these things. You know, maybe they suit your shape ahead or something, but there are many, many people, there are two other people in the room here who find they are very uncomfortable and distracting to wear.
It's
bump caps, you know, not so bad. Yet, for whatever reason, no, you can't wear bump caps anymore. You have to go back to these plastic torture devices.
It's some of our feedback to the safety team. I don't think it's something we can resolve in a forum like this. You've clearly got very strong views, not views that I follow, but sorry, sir?
It's because the views are ignored. They're not dealt with properly. I just don't know how else you can raise this, you see. I would suggest that somebody does start canvassing people on how they get on with these hats that are issued.
I'm aware that there's a national forum for health and safety kit. There's a feedback process, and there is a process whereby health and safety equipment is trialled and evaluated. And if you have specific issues that you want to bring up, then via the safety team or via line management, they can be fed.
I did ask if these hats ever were trialled and evaluated.
It's not a question I can answer, sir. You know, I'm a senior asset engineer. It's health and safety equipment procurement is certainly not my specialist subject, but it is something I can feed back to make sure that the fact that you've raised it on this call is taken back to the safety team and we can get feedback to you. I didn't catch your name, but if you could drop me an email and I'll make sure this comes back for that you get some feedback on it.
Yes, so your email address was?
My name's Hector Kids, and it's the standard format. So hector.kidds@network.com.
Okay, then. Rant over.
No problem.
Your next question comes from the line of?
Steve Edwards.
Please proceed.
Hiya, Hector.
Hi, Steve.
Hi. It's just a bit of assistance with the driver training courses. I've just got a bit more information. Anybody wants to take a note of it. So you can do it two ways. You can enrol on the self-learner using the, I think you said it yourself, NFE001. Scroll down to classes, find the course date and location that suits, and enrol that way. Or the other way you can do this is send the delegate's name, employee number, and the detail of the course to trainingrwex@networkrail.co.uk. So there are two different ways to enrol.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much, Steve.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time.
Right now, well, people are probably bored of listening to me. And if there are no further questions, I think we'll conclude the call there. So thank you very much for your time.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you so much for your participation. You may now disconnect and have a great day.